It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 369 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's a doubleheader week here, and we start out with the return of Jonathan Lewis, who has a Kickstarter going for Blue Shift 2, which we talk about, and the deadline is fast approaching because the Kickstarter has already begun. So be sure to get out there and support this wonderful book. Jonathan is a favorite here, as we like to say, and he does a lot of wonderful things and great comic storytelling, so please be sure to go to Kickstarter and support it after you listen to his interview, which was great fun. Then everything wraps up with Benjamin Roman from the Image Comics offering Auntie Agatha's Home for Wayward Rabbits. Issue number 4 has just come out, and we talk about the series and how it came to be, as well as working with Keith Giffen, a great writer that I greatly admire, and what the story's all about, as well as how he created the appearance of the different characters, and how he collaborated with Keith to make this a great book that's out right now. He's got a lot of wonderful things to say, including insights in the comics industry, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this doubleheader episode, so let's get on with the show.
Being the fastest person on the planet doesn't help when your problems aren't things you can run away from. I'm Blue Shift, a speedster. Maybe you know what happened before, maybe you don't. Either way, just running faster isn't going to be the answer this time. Shira and Daniel will be in danger if I don't succeed. She might not have forgiven me for what happened with the Necromancer, but I need her more than I ever realized. I need Beth to have a life, just as much as the city needs Blue Shift. This is my story.
It's always great to talk with Jonathan Lewis, a favorite here on the podcast, creator of such things as Blue Shift and many other books that I really enjoyed. And you've got a Kickstarter going on, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Oh, always great to be on this podcast, Wayne. I'm doing pretty good. It's Girl Scout cookie season, so I've got tons of Girl Scout cookies to sell.
Oh, boy. And you live where?
I live in the Midwest right now, so we're dealing with that fun cold snap that's going through.
See, I'm in Florida. As we're recording this, it's cooler today than it has been. But normally it's around 75 to 80 down here in Florida, which, of course, some people complain bitterly. But anyway, enough of that. But we'll get to the thing we're really here to talk about, and that's your new Kickstarter, which when this posts, it will be going already. And why don't you talk about when the thing will conclude? Let's start with that.
Let's see. It'll conclude about 2 weeks after it launches, and it's launching on Valentine's Day.
Okay. All right. That's good. And of course, it's about a woman, is the thing is about, which is always appropriate. So that's good. It's called Blue Shift Number 2, Mind Games, which is interesting. And let me read the subtitle. You're showing me the Kickstarter page before it hits. It says, "The fastest person on the planet returns. As a new enemy rises, she will face new challenges if she wants to protect her city," which is good. I always enjoy that. Of course, we've talked about who Blue Shift is, and maybe you ought to reiterate a little bit as to why you call her Blue Shift.
It's actually a physics thing. If you're moving fast enough, you shift into the ultraviolet, and you could technically be invisible. Purple shift wasn't that interesting, so we went with blue.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I always got to talk with you. I mean, you always write women characters really strong, which I really like. And it's true in this one. I got to see an 11-page preview of what's coming in Blue Shift Number 2 Mind Games. So I really enjoyed it. I love the way that the women act and talk. They're very women-like, you know, because sometimes I read comics and Well, I don't want to say it anything in a bad way, but let's just say that they talk like men with certain new appendages put on them. And you don't do that, thankfully. You make the women women, which I really enjoy. All I can do is base it on my experience. But from my experience, you do a terrific job with creating women and having them function like women.
I sure try. It's something that I want my daughter to be inspired to read. and then inspired to be when she grows up.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. Now, of course, this is under Shades of Vengeance, which you normally work function under, and normally you've got video games. Is there I don't remember. Is there a video game for Blue Shift, or is she basically just a comics character?
She's for the tabletop role-playing game Era the Empowered.
Okay, all right. So she does have other places if you really like the character you can get into. Mm-hmm. I probably asked you this before, but I've always got to ask. Speedsters are something that a lot of comics creators run away from, to try to be funny there. Because when they had, the new Teen Titans came up and they had Kid Flash in there, they took Kid Flash out of the mix because they found that he could solve pretty much any problem for them.
Yep.
So I'm just kind of curious as to, because The Flash now is written by Joshua Williamson, some of the best Flash stories I've read. But your books are right up there when it comes to the using Speedster smartly is the way I like to think about it. Talk about that. Talk about tackling a Speedster and how you did that to make sure that it was something that people could really enjoy.
Actually, you're the one that inspired this issue. Last time you and I were talking about Blue Shift, you brought up this specific subject and you challenged me of, how do you outrun a speedster or something to that effect? Mm-hmm. And me and Ed I was actually in London and, we're sitting down and talking about it and re-listening to the podcast and said, okay, you do it by outthinking them. Mm. And so there's a challenge in this issue that Blue Shift can't outrun. She has to outthink.
Mm, which is good. Of course, you'd think, now I've got to ask you a technical question as far as Blue Shift goes. Because I always wonder if they're a speedster and they can run faster than other people can run, do they think faster than people can think? Or is it just that it's just the running, the physical movement, not the mental?
I would say that you would have to have it be the mental as well, or else you run into the rover problem. Rover on Mars has about a 30-minute lag. Actually, it's way more than that. Forgive me if I don't know the right number. And if you see a cliff, say, 28 minutes away, you're screwed because the rover's going to go over the cliff. And same thing with the speedster. If they can't think as fast as they're running, they're going to splat into a wall.
Let's talk about, let's combine the two, and you're making a female speedster. What kinds of, because that's we have got several speedsters that are women, particularly in DC, the ones that leap to mind, Jesse Quick, things like that. Was it a challenge to do that? I mean, was it the female difficult to integrate with the speedster, or is it just sort of a natural fit?
I don't know about you, but every woman I've ever met's been able to outthink me.
So she could really outthink any guy that she comes across.
To quote my daughter, they were always quicker on the uptake than me, so.
It's really good, really good. Now, it says on the Kickstarter page, Blue Shift sped onto our shelves and into our hearts a year ago in Blue Shift Frenemies, and now it's time for her next adventure. How many pages are in the second issue?
Either 21 or 22. Okay. I believe at least 21 because it's me and that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So it's really good stuff. So is Blue Shift based on anybody you know or any of the characters in the story based on somebody you know?
Yes and no. The more I write characters, the more they become old friends. And to say that, this is someone in specific is to do a disservice to a friend. Mm-hmm. Certain things about her, like her physical build, her haircut, etc., are based on a female acquaintance of mine who she actually cosplayed as Jesse Quick once. And then other parts of her personality are based on different friends I've also had. There's probably a little too much of me in Danny, Shira's brother. Little things like that.
Cool. Well, it's good that you're doing that kind of stuff because she does come across as very realistic. Which is a great thing. And, of course, all the characters in my mind come across very, as if we were watching people really do things, who are real, and having to deal with, extra abilities and then still not being able to outrun your problems, I think is a wonderful concept. Because, I think we discussed before that The Flash, they canceled the book because they couldn't think what to do with them.
Yep. It's You always run into the problem of, if they can do anything, why don't they?
Mm-hmm.
The part that hit me was the Flash live action series. It reached a point where he could have a whole one-sided conversation with Iris because he was moving so fast around the room, she didn't even perceive him as moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it really snapped me out of the episode, because if you do that with a character, what's to stop them from doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
And then an episode or two later, they had the arrow there, and he's like, you could case the entire room in half a second.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really brought to light the real way to ride a speedster is to ride them with your mind, not their speed as the main focal point.
See, one of the things that jumps out to me is that's often what the Flash TV show on CW does. He's not challenged. He's had other speedsters, but now they've moved into... like the Thinker, they had one season. This year, they got Cicada, which most people would say was not going to be a real challenge to him, but he's proven to be such on the TV show. So I want to get to some of the technical stuff before I get into the book itself a little bit. So you said 2 weeks. Do you have an exact date as to when the Kickstarter is going to end?
Oh, I'm sure I have it written down somewhere.
28th?
Ask me other questions, and I'll get back to you.
Okay, and if somebody wants to get a hold of, well, I notice in the Kickstarter, you've also got Blue Shift number 1 is available there, as well as number 2. Let's say mm-hmm. somebody doesn't, for some reason, those 2 weeks, they're out of money or something, they can't participate. If somebody wants to get Blue Shift 1 or both of them, Blue Shift 1 and 2, how do they go about doing that?
You can actually buy it off our website, shadesofengines.com. Or I believe issue 1 is now available in Comixology.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So is 2 being submitted too?
It will be. But part of what I'm asking for is enough money to get the cover made.
Oh.
February 24th is the final day currently.
Oh, wow. 24th. Okay.
I might push that a little bit out because that's only 10 days away.
Yeah, I was thinking because that's not really... you know, that's not really the whole, that's not 2 weeks. If you go to the 14th, let's say it starts, and then it goes off on the 24th, that's a little less than 2 weeks. Okay, well, anyway, it's a good thing we got this scheduled for the podcast as we do, so people can actually find out about before it comes to conclusion. Do you remember what time of the day it's going to end?
Yes, it's, I usually end it around 4 or 5 in the afternoon. Yep, 4 p.m. Central Time.
Okay.
That gives most people time to get... stuff done on the East Coast and get home.
Yeah, and it's not football season, so they're not going to be busy watching television as much anymore. So that'll be good. So that's good, good stuff. So, all right, who is Blue Shift? Why don't you talk about who she is and the character and if you reveal how she gets her powers or anything like that. Talk about that character, if you would.
Beth? Oh, what's her last name? Beth Sanders? Oh, I never call her by her last name. She is... The main theory behind the Empowered Universe is there was a colony ship from Earth that crash-landed on this planet, and because of the nature of the life support failing and the cryostasis, people woke up with their memories completely fractured. And... you know, they don't even remember that they're on another world. As far as they're aware, this was some machine that put them in stasis while something else happened to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that at the time everybody had different theories, but this is decades later. Society has completely forgotten that. And in their own way, they've recreated roughly the 80s or 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But with weird juxtapositions, like they have cell phones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's just different jumps in technology that are a little more modern. And then there's other things about it, like in the opening page of Blue Shift number 2,
mm-hmm.
she has an answering machine with a corded phone on it.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. I mean, you know, sometimes I regret we've lost some of those things because they made life a little... It wasn't so far advanced it was tough to deal with. It was something that we could... understand and function with. So I'm kind of miss those good days. But so as far as Beth goes, I can't find her last name in there either. So we'll have to trust you then. I'm sure it's in there but it's not like a DC or a Marvel comic where the whole name is really critical. It's more about the individuals. And I talk about, you said this, she basically came from another planet, is what you're saying.
Sandwalker is her name. Holly days.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, she comes from Earth, but it's this echo of a memory of, it's Earth, but not Earth, so she calls it Terra.
Yeah, I noticed that. I noticed that. So that's kind of cool. I get a kick because, you know, you talked about the purple shift notion. She wears purple lipstick and purple clothes a lot of the time.
Yep. She even has a purple wig to hide her short blonde hair, because I've never understood why characters didn't wear a wig or something, because you'd look at them and be like, hey, you have the exact same haircut as Superman.
Yeah. And Green Arrow was the worst. I mean, he always had a goatee. And as soon as you take the mask off, he still had the goatee. And I'd be like, well, can't people just notice that? I mean,
we have to remember the DC Universe is a world where Nightwing, a domino mask, is enough to make everyone in the world face blind.
Yeah. Well, of course, Clark Kent and his glasses, too, show you about that stuff. So it's interesting. But, I like the character. I enjoy it. And, of course, what you've done is you've introduced a love interest. And she gets involved in the story in a very interesting way. And I don't know how much you want to talk about. We've got to be careful not to give away important plot points for issue number two. But we meet Shira in the first issue, right?
Yep. One of the things that I always thought was interesting is, as a superhero, you have your civilian identity and you have your superhero identity, and the two are very, very separate. And there are so few people that you can be truly yourself around. That's why it always interested me to read comics where Lois knew who Clark was, where someone knew who Bruce Wayne was, is it let them be their true selves, not Batman and not Bruce Wayne, but the true full person that was there. And sticking with Batman, the interesting one for him was, it was typically the villains that figured out his secret identity, let him be himself around somebody. It was a villain, but it was someone he could truly be himself around. And I went ahead and rolled with that with Beth here, so that when she actually gets knocked out by three different villains, and two of them like, oh, well, you know, people treat Empowered very badly, especially the police. They really don't like vigilantism. We're going to take her home and nurse her back to health, because they weren't just going to leave her either to die or to someone else's mercies. And so they already knew what she looked like under the mask. So she didn't see any reason not to just be herself.
Which is cool. I mean, you know, it seems to me more and more that that's the case. You know, especially if you don't have a lot of close relationships with folks, it just seems like that's going to be the safest way, is just to be yourself. And then you don't have to keep two sets of rules going in your head as to what do you say when you're wearing a mask and what don't you say when you're not wearing a mask, kind of stuff. So that's a good thing to do. Now, you know, you did point out in the pages I saw, the answer to the question I asked before, and I just didn't notice it, was that she's talking with Shira at one point. Shira says something, and of course, how does she react? Beth is always going to be fast. She's going to respond to things quickly. And you see three looks of her as she goes through the different parts. This is one time she says, oh, sure, sure. And she says, looks at her and says, I have all day. And then, and all of a sudden she turns to the other one and goes, wait, do you have all day? She goes, do you have all day? So I got a kick out of that, because that's how quickly, I mean, Shira doesn't get to complete the whole sentence before she said three sentences.
So yep.
That's kind of cool stuff about how you're handling that. Speedsters ought to be, they should think and function differently than the rest of us do. So
I write her a little bit like someone who is slightly autistic or slightly has Asperger's syndrome. She's not really thinking through what's happening. She's just responding to it, and she can respond so fast that it feels like she's actually making a somewhat, if tripping over herself, normal response.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that. Now, talk about who Shira is, because now in the first issue they met. Why don't you talk about how they met and, you know, who she is in relationship to Beth?
She is a teleporter. She's one of a set of twins. And the first time that Blue Shift meets her, she's robbing a bank by literally just walking around the bank vault and touching bags of money. And the money is disappearing from her hands and appearing in her brother, her twin brother, Danny's hands, who is standing above a big old dump truck and dropping it into the dump truck. And the moment she tries to attack Shira, Shira just grabs a hold of Blue Shift and be as fast as you'd like. You're not as fast as instant teleportation. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Blue Shift is dangling up, you know, several stories above a truck full of money. Mm-hmm. You know, and Danny's trying to hang on to her, but also trying to decide, do I want to hang on to her?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is cool. Now, they, of course, develop a relationship out of that intermingling like that. And at the beginning of the second book, it looks like some time has passed since the first book to get into the second. Do you have any idea about how much?
Canonically, between a month and a half and three.
3 months, okay. So we don't know exactly. We don't spell that out exactly, which is probably a good thing because it gives them gives us a chance to fill in the gaps as we need to. But they obviously have kind of grown together, and then maybe now they're starting to grow apart. Talk a little bit about that, about the changes in their relationship when number two starts.
Well, not to give away the ending of book one, but something happens with Danny that Shira is incredibly upset at Blue Shift about, and without thinking, shouts at her, "Run, that's all you're ever good at anyway."
Mm-hmm.
And without thinking, of course, because it's Blue Shift, that's exactly what she does, is she just bolts from the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they've tried to keep in contact, they've tried to talk, but they haven't been able to reconnect their relationship the way either of them thought it would go.
Mm-hmm.
And someone sort of steps out of the shadows and says to Shira, "I know Blue Shift, and I know that she's Beth, and I can help you fix the situation because I'm an objective third party."
Mm.
You know, neither of you really mean anything to me, and I think if I just talk to her for a couple minutes, I could sort everything out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I noticed you mentioned the name of this person in the Kickstarter. I don't know if you want to do it here, or we'd rather have people go to the Kickstarter page and find all this good stuff out.
Oh, I love the guy too much not to mention him by name. Okay. Monolith.
Yeah. That's a great name. I love the look of him, too. He's got he's got like a gargoyle-ish kind of wings. I always love winged characters. But he's got like a green, I don't know how to describe it. It looks almost like a spine with stuff on his chest. And then he's got lines going through the rest of his armor that he's wearing and stuff. So mm-hmm. he's quite a tough cookie, looks like, as far as these things go. I like, too, that the name Monolith is outlined in green. So that resembles a costume. I thought that was really smooth. I liked that quite a lot. So, and of course,
I did the lettering on this, so I actually sampled the color from the costume that our artist was so nice to create that costume for us, and I couldn't resist.
And then, of course, once again, the guy, Monolith, starts to speak, but before he can even finish his sentence, Blue Shift is busy doing something, shall we say.
Yep.
I guess huge kick out of her character. I like the fact. And then, of course, we kind of, I don't know if we completely resolve things as far as Shira and Beth, but the truth of the matter is it I think relationships go cold too fast in comics and also in media. You know, you're friends for like a week or two on the TV show and then suddenly you vanish forever. I would much rather that it be a little grayer than that. And I think that seems to me like what you're doing is making this much more gray. And we're not exactly sure. If we get to the end at least the 11 pages I got to see, we don't necessarily know where that relationship's going to go.
Yeah, it's... I'm trying not to give away the next 10 pages. So I have them in front of me, and I'm like, I don't want to give it away. Yeah. I hadn't lettered them yet. That's why I hadn't sent them to you.
Okay.
But, me and Ed were working on this thing to the last minute, to the point at which I sent you the review copy, and Ed sent me a note of, wait, before you send to Wayne, let me make, like, five more changes. And I went, no.
That's all right. You know, you can always change it after I get to look at it. It doesn't have to be considered final when I see it. Because if you want to make the story better, and you're good at making, you know, improving stuff as you go along. So I'm not concerned about that. I get a huge kick, though, because, you know, as somebody who I help with another couple of comics, and I was helping the writer. He had written a page, and he had gotten the artist to draw the page, but he hadn't put any dialogue in. So now he had to go back and put new dialogue in on that page, and it kind of frustrated him that he didn't do it that way in the first. But he actually came up, I thought, with some really good dialogue on that page as well. So, you know, as you guys go along and you look at it again, you might think, wait a minute, especially since you can letter. You can update these things and make things a little better than maybe they started out with at first. So do we know who Monolith is? I mean, you don't necessarily have to reveal his secret identity or who he is, but is he somebody we've seen in the book before or somebody we haven't?
You've seen some of the things that he's done. You've not seen the man himself.
Okay.
If you buy the tabletop role-playing game, Heir of the Empowered, you very much know who he is.
Okay.
So I don't mind saying he's that perfect juxtaposition. What's the old saying? There are old soldiers and there are bold soldiers, but there are very few old, bold soldiers. And that is very much who Monolith is. He's an old, bold soldier that he's made it long enough to stand beyond the rest. Always the last man standing. And then a being called the Harbinger came to Terra and said, I'm going to grant you enough power to save the world, but you're going to need to do things that maybe you're not okay with. And Monolith replies with, I'm a soldier. I've lived my life doing things I'm not okay with for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, is this stuff in the game that you're telling me right now? I just want to be sure where this is all available. Or is this kind of that you've come up with, but it hasn't quite made it to the comic yet?
It's what I've specifically mentioned was stuff that Ed wrote for the original tabletop role-playing game 5 years ago when we were originally sat down, he and I, working on this game.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't appeared in the comics yet, and I got to be careful to say this. He is the villain. He is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Beth even introduces him as, hey, that was a big bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she says at one point, like, I'm going to do what the bad guy says. She's referring to something that he wants her to do. The thing I'm going to be fascinated to find out is why he seems to want to interact with Blue Shift. What is it about her that attracts his attention, or is it he's being guided to interact with her? Maybe that's something you don't want to give away at this point, but I'm going to be fascinated to find out. I always like how things come to be, and that would be something I'd really like to know. Don't spoil it if it's something that you're going to reveal before too long. But you know, I'm just kind of fascinated about his desire. I mean, I can't give away stuff, but let's just say he sets things in motion that are really interesting in the second book, and so I'm going to be interested to learn how he has a connection with her. That interests me.
I said there's, you know, probably a lot of me and Danny.
Mm-hmm.
There is way too much of me and Monolith. And, you know, as the creator of, well, not the creator, well, I guess I co-created it, mm-hmm. and the co-writer of this universe, I have this point where I can sort of reach down and I'm not necessarily making their lives better, because that's, you know, not what makes a good book.
Mm-hmm.
And Monolith is doing something similar of he's not being a good guy because he doesn't care,
mm-hmm.
which is a weird way to say that. But
okay. That leads me to think something else, but we won't go into that because that might be a spoiler. But so it's really fascinating to me. I like the male versus female parts of this. Because Monolith is sort of very masculine in some of the ways that he's dealing with things. And Blue Shift is feminine on some of the levels that she's doing. That's from my perspective. Nobody else is really, I'm sure. But I'm always kind of interested. The male versus female dynamic is always really interesting to me. So, as we get farther along in the book, I'm going to be dying to read and see the rest of it, because I'm always interested. Usually the woman comes out in the end because she's faster, shall we say, than the male. The male is stronger, but she's faster. So that's going to be something to see as what you got. Now, question, is this story going to end in this issue, or are we going to go on to another issue after this?
I'm wrapping up the story in that you finally do get to see where Shira and Beth's relationship is headed. Not okay. Where it's going to go, but where it's headed.
Okay.
I need to, because the next volume is going to be that team up you're always asking me about.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to that. I love it when it's very revealing, maybe I should say that, when heroes get together and start interacting with each other, you start to see aspects of their personality you may not see when they're just on their own. So that's what I've longed for, a team up, some group get together. Now, whether you do it only once or whether you do it, have your little ongoing story with that separately, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it too. I've started writing on it, and it keeps pestering me for first looks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait. It's good. Now, as far as you and Ed's writing together and stuff like that, how does that go? Does one of you write a certain number of pages? Do you have certain concepts you want to write about, and so you do that, and he does others? How do you guys, working as a team of writers, how do you do that?
Using Blue Shift 2, actually, is the example. Mm-hmm. He and I sat down and made an overarching story years ago. Mm-hmm. For Blue Shift 2, I specifically pitched an idea to him of, what would a speedster do with a house of mirrors? Mm. It doesn't matter if you can look in every reflection. Unless you're faster than light, you can't beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, but if I had super speed, I would just run around the maze real quick, and it wouldn't matter as long as I kept touching the mirror to know what was real and what wasn't. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, well, it's not Beth, it's Shira in the maze. Mm-hmm. And then I sat down, and I have a blank comic script, and I go page by page and say, on this page this happens, on this page this happens, on this page this happens, just a one-sentence description.
Right.
And then if any particular scene, if any particular panels just pop into either of our heads, it's a shared Google Doc, and we'll write that page or that panel or just throw some extra dialogue in after that sentence of, I think Beth would say this, I think Monolith would say that. And at some point, I sit down and I'll write the whole thing as a full comic, editing everything for pacing, maybe moving panels around, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then we send it to the artist, who sends it back. And then I'll go through three or four drafts of lettering as I'm lettering the comic.
Hmm. Interesting, because I'm familiar with Richard Rivera's, and his style is very different from yours. And I think every writer does it to their strengths, and I think that's a great way to do it. You reminded me, I took a class once, and the guy that was writing or teaching it, he actually was saying the same thing you did. What he did was, he'd start out with the chapters in a novel, and he wrote what happened in every chapter. And then he mm-hmm. would go back and start filling in the details. And then he would start writing the text of each chapter and stuff. So it was a slow process development. Because Rick tends to do the whole thing all at once. He tends to, when he writes, it tends to come down. Now he does it differently. I don't actually watch him when he's writing and stuff. But he tends to, the way he describes it, he sits down and he has this in his head what he wants to have happen. And he starts to write and it comes together as he's writing it. And I don't know many people who can do that. That's a creative way to do it. But I'm glad to know that you're kind of plotting this all out and kind of figuring you guys work on this together. That's kind of a neat thing, because most people don't do that. Most people that I have interacted with always tell me they write certain parts or certain characters, and then the other person handles the other parts. And the creative process is something fascinating. I always love it. So. And obviously yours works well, because all the books come out and they're great reads. So all I can say
thank you.
I think that you guys have developed a process that is really great. So that's going real well. Now, let's see. So we talked about Shira. Now, Danny, of course, who we see in the first issue, you mentioned about him. He has something to do with the second issue. I don't know if you want to give away much about that, but let's just say he appears there. He doesn't have quite the influence that he did in the first issue.
He's still healing from what happens at the end of the first issue. But I wanted to take a moment with him and show something that, growing up in the South, I encountered quite a bit. Mm. Understanding isn't acceptance, and acceptance isn't understanding. Mm. He accepts that his sister is gay, and he accepts that she has a relationship with Beth. That doesn't mean he understands it. That doesn't mean he knows what to talk about. You know, he accepts it, he's happy for it, but he still has no clue what it is because it's completely outside of his experience.
Right, right. That's interesting. So he's growing as a character as well. So that's kind of neat.
As much as I can make him grow, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's one of the things that always worries me, too, about comics is that political correctness, and some people live by it. But to me, I always feel like it's kind of stifled. You know, people shouldn't always grow in politically correct ways. They should grow other directions and maybe come around to understanding some of this stuff later on. But you're right. It doesn't necessarily, just because you understand it or even accept it, doesn't mean that you understand it. Those things are not together with that. That's a great point, I think, to make. We need to have more of that today.
Yeah. It's how I grew up. And I had a grandfather who was about as politically incorrect as you could get. And he believed that you should always try and either accept or understand the other person. Mm-hmm. Tolerance was a fool's game, John. Tolerance is how much poison you can take before it kills you.
That's a good way to put that. Because, sometimes I think the way we deal with problems, you know, interpersonal problems, doesn't necessarily resolve them. It just makes them go underground.
Yep.
So that's kind of a great way to – that's a lesson I think we need to examine a little more. So I think that's great you're doing that. So, okay. So you've got the 22 pages, and that's Kickstarter is going to end on the 14th at 4 o'clock – or sorry, 24th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time. Or is that Central time? Did I get it wrong? That's Central time.
You already changed my mind. I think I'll do the 28th at 6 Central time.
See, I think that's better. I think that 2 weeks is better than just like a week. I think a week, people, you know, you get that dead period that happens in the middle of a Kickstarter. You don't want to end in the middle of your what might be your dead period. So I think
so many people get paid at the end of the month too.
Yes,
so.
Yes, granted, yep. And also they get paid, you know, Fridays. So if they can, you know, promise to do it and then get it done on Friday if they have to, they can get that caught up. So that's good stuff. So you talked about there's another Blue Shift possibly coming that you're working on. Is this kind of like an annual kind of thing? Is it yearly that you do it, or does it when it fits in your schedule? Is that when Blue Shift happens?
Oh, when it fits in my schedule, I usually get out 7 or 8 comics a year, and I try to. In the past, I've tried to switch between science fiction comics and superhero comics, but in the last couple of years, the superhero comics have sold so much better that this upcoming year is going to be nothing but superhero comics. I've got one more sci-fi comic that's going to come out first, but that's it.
Cool, cool. Now you mentioned there's a team up coming down the road, so you said like you do 7 or 8 comics in a year. Is this the first one for this year, or the second one? I'm trying to remember. This is the second one.
What was it called? Oh, the third Bug War. I did
right at
the end of the year.
That's right.
Beginning of this year. So okay. No, she's my first superhero comic this year.
Oh, cool! Very cool. It's going to be good. So you got about 6 or 7 other ones in there, and one of them is likely to be a team book. So
yep.
Okay.
Well, there's that person that steals Beth's wine on the second or third panel or second or third page.
Yeah.
And I haven't talked to her in a while. I got to make sure that she gets her book or she'll get upset with me.
Okay. That'll be good. Good to see. So you're going to have another busy year here, it sounds like. Go do all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Now, you tend to... I haven't gotten to see the cover. That's the one thing you didn't send me was to see the cover, and that's what largely the Kickstarter is taking care of. So now, of course, you got my interest peaked. I got to see what that cover looks like, you know?
You and me both. You always ask me, John, why do you set your goals so low? This Kickstarter is only going to be $500. The answer is because I launch the Kickstarter when I've run out of money, and I show to Wayne everything I have before I ran out of money. I don't have enough money for the cover.
Oh, man, that's too bad, because I'm sure it's going to be great, because your covers in the past have been wonderful. So now I'm really interested to see them. So it's going to be good stuff. I'm sure it's going to be a success. And, you know, knowing your past ability to successfully conclude Kickstarters, I think this one's going to be go right in there with as another one of your successful ones, which is going to be good. As soon as it's up there, I'll go up there and contribute. By the time this post, I'll have contributed. So if you go check it out. Now, if people want to find it on Kickstarter, what do they look for?
Blue Shift, which has a dash between it, because... And you did this to us. We constantly argue, is Blue Shift one word or two words or two words with a dash? So Blue Shift with a dash, number two, Mind Games.
Okay, that sounds good. You know, it's terrible to be a proofreader. I sit there and I'll be with all my friends, and all of a sudden a commercial will come on, and I'll go, doggone them. And they go, what's the matter? What's the matter? I said, they spelled refrigerator wrong. And everybody looks at me like, what? You actually pay attention to that? So I look at things and I wonder, why is that? Or shouldn't that be this way? Or how can it be? But yeah, well, you do a really good job with that good stuff. So I'm not worried about it. I'm sure it's going to be great stuff. And good thing. Are there other projects that you're up to that we should know about?
Let's see. Coming up, I have a comic called Disarmed that I want people to take a look at. It's my baby. It's the one that just me wrote. You know, Ed, of course, always has to weigh in because it's that particular universe is his universe. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's always going to get the co-writer credit because, golly days, he co-created it, and he definitely spent as much time on the script as I did. But Disarmed was my baby. It's something that I wrote from beginning to end and then turned into him, and then we edited it. And it's coming up after Blue Shift 2, and Blue Shift's my baby. I love her more than anybody else, and Disarmed is my close second.
Now, you know, I always have to ask, because you're involved with video games and stuff like that, any chance we might see an animated Blue Shift coming?
We have been talking to some animators in the recent past. It always comes down to, give us enough money and we'll do it.
Yeah. We might have to Kickstarter that to get that baby going. That might be the thing.
Oh, that might be fun.
It might be fun. I'd love to see it because speed stuff like that, I think the Flash TV show does a nice job of handling the speed. Stuff I like, the yellow, and when XS runs, it's yellow and purple, and when Flash runs, it's yellow and red. Other people, it's almost entirely yellow. I like those kinds of things, and I like the fact that it moves so fast we can't usually see what they're doing when they're moving that fast. So I like those things. One of the things you do in the book that I really like is what the artist does is have, like, let's say there's Blue Shift, and you see her four or five times in a room. She's zooming around. We're talking about checking out the room and stuff. She does that in the book. And I always enjoy those kinds of things. I'd love to see this animated. I just think it would be a great, you know, series or something. You know, Netflix could really use this, I think. This would be a great place for it.
Oh, I'd love to pitch it to them. I think I still have a few friends that work there.
Oh, cool. Well, you ought to. I think that would be something to see. Because they're... I don't know what's happened to animation, but we've lost the superheroic angle on many levels. Now, DC Universe, they brought back Young Justice, which I have to say, you know, more power to them. I love that show. I really, really do. But I think that Netflix is going sort of the way of Cartoon Network when they're appealing to, like, 7 or 8 year olds, and not always, not in a good way. So I'd love to see more superheroic stuff like that that's actually thoughtful and, you know, and handles characters smartly and things like that. I think Netflix, if you're listening, you need to consider this because you need those kinds of shows that engage us. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to see anyway. That's my suggestion anyway.
I got to agree with you on that. I'd love to see it happen. I'd love to see a shift in their focus, a little bit wider cast of the net. No? Mm-hmm.
A blue shift in their focus. That would be good. That would be a good way to go. Well, Jonathan, you're doing wonderful stuff as always. I cannot wait. I'm sure this Kickstarter will be a success, but it won't be a success unless you guys get out there and support it. And he's told you how to be able to find it on Kickstarter. So get out there and make this thing happen. It's only a two-week one, so your time's limited. Make sure you get it done. And he's got some great – I saw some of the levels that he's offering. They're great ones for that. I know already which one I want to sign up for. So, Jonathan, keep it up. You know, we'll get the word out. And I can't wait to see what you're going to be doing next after Blue Shift.
Oh, thanks, Wynn. Always an honor being on your podcast. I know I say it every time, but I cannot tell you what a dream come true it is to listen to your podcast every week and then every now and then get to be invited on it. I love it.
Well, you're a favorite around here, so we'll do this a lot more in the future.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's great to welcome to the podcast Benjamin Roman, the artist on Auntie Agatha's Home for Wayward Rabbits, which is coming out from Image, and issue number 4 has just come out when this posts. So how are you doing today, Benjamin?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thank you for having me on.
It's good to talk with you. I have to say, it's one of those creative books. Keith Giffen, of course, is the writer, and whenever Keith Giffen does stuff, I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
I read a book of his a long time ago where it was the Justice League, and they got transported to this other world, and they were small when they got there. And what they did was they took over a robot of a black person, and they couldn't get the controls quite right. So when it's walking down the street, this other guy's going, "Hey, brother, go ahead. You're doing it just right." I laughed so loud about that. It still makes me laugh. I want to think of something that makes me laugh. I think of that because that was just so funny. You know, a Justice League book that was funny. I still, sometimes I can't get past that, but it was good. So, well, why don't you tell me, is this a story that Keith came up with? Did you come up with it together? How'd that happen?
Well, we were working at the time. The way that the rabbits came around was probably like 10 years ago. Keith and I worked on a series called I Love Halloween for Tokyo Pop. And that was the first time I had anything published, and I got hooked up with him through the editor and chief at the time was Mark Panincia. I think he's still over at Marvel now. Mm. And he has shown him just a bunch of my art, and there was like a lot of random images in there. There was from the Halloween book. There was just all these gothic Halloween characters, and I also had it was just a portfolio of just random images. And I had an image in there of just this awkward looking girl with just a ton of rabbits surrounding her. And it was just a throwaway image. You know, it was just all the rabbits look the same, just a generic kind of, you know, cutesy look. And I just had it in my portfolio. And for some reason, it struck him. And, you know, fast forward 10 years later, after Halloween is done, where, you know, Tokyo Pop is, you know, Tokyo Pop is where Tokyo Pop's at now. Mm-hmm. And he emails me 4 years ago and he says, "Hey, you know," his email actually was, "Do you have an itch?" So I'm like, "Yeah, of course. I'd love to work with you again." So I asked him, "Well, you got any ideas?" And he's like, "Benji," "Benji, you got a, how about that rabbit project?" I'm like, "Wait, what are you talking about?" And he mentions this little pinup that I completely forgot about, and wow. He just dug it out, and he was like, he created an entire story off of just some random sketch and these characters. So it's great. It's great to kind of just bounce stuff off of him. Like, so he'll have a general idea, you know, rabbits living in this home that, you know, all these characters come from. There's some backstory to every one of these rabbits is coming from something tragic, maybe being left, you know, a present that is that loses its appeal and is thrown out in the lawn, you know, some backyard. And there's always crazy stories, and he'll bounce names and ideas, and he'll ask me to riff off of it, just off of a name. And he's great. He's fantastic to collaborate with. And at first it's really intimidating because, you know, it's Keith Giffen,
right.
But he is, I think the and there's probably been many people that would say that about Keith, but he's the nicest guy. Everything that you know, in his interviews, and comes off as this gruff guy, but he's a super, super sweet guy.
Well, he and Dan DiDio for a while were warring with each other, it seemed like, and I thought, this just doesn't seem real to me. It seems like what they're doing.
He's mentioned Dan many times in our phone conversations, and he says the nicest things. So I think there's a bit of a showmanship going on there.
I think it's them having fun. I think they like to have fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's what they're doing with that. Well,
yeah, now, it's great though. It really is really cool. The process of just creating stuff, it's a blast. And he'll throw out just names of random stuff. And it was, what do you think of, you know, just throw out a name, and I go, oh, that's really cool. And I'll just do a bunch of sketches, and I'll throw it back at him, and either he likes it or he doesn't, and we just, you know, move on from there.
Now, there's a website called waywardrabbits.com, and that's about the book. There's a paragraph in there, and actually it gives away a little something that I haven't seen so far. Maybe I'll just read the paragraph. Since it's public, I can probably read it. It says, Auntie Agatha's home for wayward rabbits is in danger. The peculiar shelter that cares for damaged and dysfunctional rabbits, run by Agatha and her niece Julie, is under attack. A wealthy businessman, J. Jackson Jackson, will stop at nothing until he owns their property. And well, yes, we did see some of that. Now that I think of it, there was a...
I think it's in issue 4 where we get a full reveal of this character.
Because we've got two women, big, tall. I want to call them women in black, kind of people. They're funny, you know. It's typical Keith type of stuff. You know, they're doing crazy stuff, and then the rabbits are kind of. They talk in very unusual terms, shall we say?
Yes, I love it. I love that. Yeah.
I like the fact that the title of the book is Auntie Agatha, and she's the one that we see the least.
I think it's great. I when he first mentioned the name to me, I was like, I don't know, that's a really long name. And then it's just like anything, once you say it enough times, it works. And it is, it is funny. You hardly see, you know, Agatha.
Now, yeah. I do want to go, because I think your artwork really helps on that. There's a page, if you go to waywardrabbits.com, there's a characters page. And you obviously do the are those new illustrations, if you go to that page, the characters page?
Those were originally going to be used just as I was trying to decide on what to do for the layout of each book. On the back cover, I wanted to have something fun to put back there. Originally I was just going to have each character, like a really, you know, super highly detailed glossy image of each character. And I decided just to we didn't go in that direction, and I just ended up using them for the website as like nice little profile images.
I really like them. Julie's at the top. Thank you. She's the one at the top, and she's eating what looks like a Tootsie Pop or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's got her tongue stuck out, which is all green, thanks to the Tootsie Pop. And she's, of course, got this perfectly image for her. She's got this sort of scowly look. You know, she doesn't take anything very seriously, or if she does, she's going to have critical comments to make about it.
A lot of that stuff is what's funny. What's fun about because the story is so linear, it's so Keith. I mean, without giving anything away, like the story really takes place like in a day, 2 days.
Really?
And it feels, Keith always says the book works stronger when it's collected, mm-hmm. Or as you read it in one sitting, because it does move, like it doesn't miss a beat from the next issue. So we have the character, like the Julie character, is just wearing one type of one piece of clothing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just the sweater, the skirt, and the same clothing throughout all the issues. Mm-hmm. So getting a chance to do like nice little pinups or stuff in for the website, we get to kind of change the clothing a bit, because it feels weird that the character's just wearing one set of clothing throughout the whole run of the book.
Did you say how old is Julie?
I'd say probably 14. I always kind of envisioned I named it after my wife. So I was looking for I would say probably like I always kind of thought like, you know, like a kid, 14, right? You know, enough. I guess in the book there's a, because we're kind of thrown into the book, so mm-hmm. you kind of feel like these characters have been living here, you know, for some time. So I wanted to have her be old enough where she can be a little snarky with right. The other main character, Sawyer.
Right.
So she's been there for a while, mm-hmm. on the estate.
Really cool. I love the drawing of her with her. She's got her eyebrows are kind of, what? You know, I like that. Then we get to Sawyer. Sawyer is the next one. Sawyer's kind of the purplish bluish one with kind of a purple nose. Talk about who Sawyer is.
Keith, what's Sawyer was the first character we created for the series, and originally we had Keith wanted to do that. So, you know, Sawyer's his history is a bit mysterious. We know we kind of get hints of I'm not sure if it's been established yet, but we get hints of where they came from. A lot of them from a facility. Mm-hmm. And originally where his heart pattern was, one of the ideas we were going to throw around was that there's a tattoo that was of a heart that was put on his chest. Mm-hmm. So then when the hair grows in, it affects the fur and the pattern. So it creates this heart shape on his chest. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny because it just seems like a really sweet character, but the guy, you know, he's just totally bitter. I don't know if bitter is the word. I feel like he's
sarcastic.
Very sarcastic, yeah. And I love the contrast of, you look at, you know, you just look at the image of the character, and it looks just like this sweet little you know, rabbit with really long ears. Mm-hmm. But once you have a conversation with him, it's just he can be trying. You know, he to me feels like, of all the characters, that feels like Keith.
Okay. One of the things that's interesting about the design is that instead of most rabbit's ears go up, his lay back. They go back over his back. It almost looks like hair, the way that.
Yeah, that was challenging. I was trying to figure out. I looked at a bunch of. A ton of designs for rabbits that have been done throughout. You know, like comics, cartoons, and movies. And I was just trying to find a way to do something different. And mm-hmm. I did play with the idea that it feels like hair, mm-hmm. Especially with Sawyer has a. It's weird because if you draw the character straight on, the ears pull back look weird, so mm-hmm. I would try to have the hair just kind of overlap each other at mm-hmm. times, and mm-hmm. it, I guess it wouldn't really make any sense since you can control both of them, but I kind of like the idea that it feels like almost like a swoops of hair. It was just kind of fun to just try something different with that, and I think he was the most challenging because the ears are so long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, he's kind of fun. I mean, he is he's the standout of the bunch. Although I like, I'll jump to the one that I like just because it makes me laugh. Buster.
Buster is great. That's that one was challenging. That was really challenging.
Because Buster, what's happening is you look at the picture of him and he's got a rabbit mask on with a little bowler hat. But you can see he's got a collar, and it's got a dog bone hanging from it. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, he is, well, I don't want to spoil the story, but let's just say that Buster is not who he seems to be.
Yeah.
Shall we say? Because he's funny. And he's...
That was a fun one. I think that my personal favorites are Sawyer Pope and Buster. Mm-hmm. Buster really is a fun design. Mm-hmm. Because the I wanted to kind of have the mask feel like it's something like a carnival mask. Mm-hmm. The contrast is just so much fun. You're staring at the character, it's just like a blankness. Mm-hmm. You can't see his eyes. Mm-hmm. See, there's a lot of mystery about the character. Mm-hmm. That's a fun one. I whenever I get a chance to draw him, he's not in the first three that much, but when I do get a chance, it's a blast.
Mm-hmm. He's a fun character. I get a huge kick out of it. You know, at first I thought, this is strange for a rabbit to wear a rabbit mask. For the life of me, I couldn't figure it out. And I'm sitting there, and of course, we found out what's going on as we progress, mm-hmm. which I won't spoil here. But I got a kick out of the whole business, I guess. It's just fun stuff. Now, we don't necessarily have to go through them all. But sure. Frankie is another good one. You want to talk a little bit about Frankie?
It's
kind of goldish.
Frankie and Annette. Mm-hmm. I remember Keith asked me about that. He was like, "You ever heard of Frankie and Annette?" I'm like, I know of them. I know those beach movies, the mm-hmm. beach blanket bingo or something like that.
Yeah, that stuff.
And it's great. I think he was surprised that I even knew of those two people. He wanted to create these characters that are just like this constantly feud, like originally I think it was the idea was going to be a feuding couple. Mm-hmm. The doting Frankie, which is everyone of these characters has some issues. Mm-hmm. That's why they're at Auntie Agatha's home. Mm-hmm. I think with Frankie, there's there's some issues with I'm trying to think here. Connecting with people, with he's got a codependency issue.
Okay.
So he's just, you know, anything that his wife Annette says, even the craziest thing, he's just going to excuse it. He's going to justify it. And Annette is just crazy. She's I think in the fourth or third issue, she really lays into one of the characters, and Frankie is right there to just doesn't bat an eye. Doesn't even blink. He's just like, I am. He doesn't even question that I might be in a crazy relationship. He's just the completely doting spouse. And I do like those characters a lot. I think we get enough of those characters in the book.
Well, the thing that interests me too is they're the colors on their faces. Half the face is like a dark brown and half the face is kind of a light brown. Which I find interesting. Is that to show that they're together? That they're.
Yeah, I was trying to find a way to I was looking up because there's so many designs on with cartoon rabbits and mm-hmm. but I haven't seen too many Harlequin designs. I really wanted to just try to tackle something different with those two characters. That was kind of challenging just because, you know, there's not, you don't, I guess you don't really see that too often, mm-hmm. doing that.
Mm-hmm. And again, Annette's ears are turned to the right instead of being back behind. So another chance where you get to have fun with the ears.
I think that the things that stand out with both those characters, Annette being that, her color scheme or the pattern is, you know, lying right down the middle, mm-hmm. with the brown and the orange, and her swooping hair, ears that act like hair, mm-hmm. and with Frankie, it's he's got these stubby ears and really big feet. Mm-hmm. Was the things I really wanted to stand out with those two characters.
Cool.
That's fun when I get a chance to at least have those two kind of play off each other. It's really,
it's great fun. All these characters are different from each other, and they got individual personalities, which is half the fun of the book, is to see how these guys interact.
Yeah.
I want to do two more real quickly. Loomis. Is Loomis a rabbit?
No. Loomis, apparently I found out Loomis is a, it seems like the names kind of all come from, it seems like a lot of the characters are named after either either relatives or, in my case, one's named after my wife. Loomis apparently is named after some family member of Keith's, which is amazing that they actually, there's a, you know, they named their kid Loomis. Loomis is a mouse that has some real, you know, he's just like the paranoid bunker guy, you know. He's just always waiting for the thing to happen. You know, the conspiracy guy. And I remember when Keith originally started to, you know, write down the notes as far as what's the deal with this dude. And it's just so off the wall. It's so weird.
That's Keith, I hate to tell you.
Yeah, it's like the rabbit pellets, and you know, he's eating in the book, he's collecting you know, there's a big, you know, story with him in the book, but it starts off with him wanting to collect these rabbit pellets, and you know, he asked Julie, you know, you mind if I use these for something? And he has this big paranoia of cats coming to rule the world. So he has a plan for all these rabbit pellets. And when I you know, finished reading the script, I was like, wow, this is really weird. Like, it's really bizarre. And it just, I think it's just Keith having, you know, this is his first creator owned book in maybe 20 years. And I think it's just him letting loose and going, you know what, let me see how far I can push it. And if they rein me back in, you know, then they'll let me know. But it's so off the wall with Loomis and the paranoia of cats and creating something that might be destructive, and with these pellets, and it's just really bizarre.
Now there's a couple others, and I'll just mention them in passing, as Pope and Fritter. Ahsoka, I think, is an allusion. I think looks like to Japanese.
She's from Rabbit Island. Yeah. Which I Keith mentioned there's a Rabbit Island on the phone, but I don't know if he was messing with me. I actually didn't look it up, but I take him for at his word that there's a Rabbit Island. Okay. But Fritter is a fun one. I came up with. I looked at you know, it was like Fritter. That's a funny name. It's a hilarious name. I was like, oh, nobody's used it yet. And I just thought, you know, having a character with OCD, and there's bound to be at least one, you know, individual on this estate that might have some, you know, some issues with OCD. And I thought that might work perfectly for a cat that a rabbit that is wearing socks, and it just is completely. It just wants to be, I guess, left alone. And Pope is great because Pope I designed based on in Animal House. There's the guy who he's the guy with the mustache. He had a motorcycle. He's in all the Adam Sandler movies. Forgot his name. I based it on him, and just the look of it. There's something about the guy with the. He's got this big handlebar mustache, and there's something about his look that just I liked a lot. So I tried to apply that to Pope, and I just played with the hair pattern and the color to kind of give this look where he's got like a goatee and a mustache, and yeah, he's a fun one. I think that the idea with Pope is that he's the oldest character. He's been there the longest on these. And so he's probably the wisest, but it doesn't come out in his words. You know, he'll usually quote, you know, misquote something, and you kind of think like, what's the deal with this guy? I think probably of all the characters, he's probably the most damaged. That we, if we get a chance to explore that more, that'd be kind of cool. But yeah, he's just, you know, something about always misquoting something. And it just doesn't, you know, he's trying to help, but, you know, whatever he says doesn't really, you know, apply to the situation.
He drives Sawyer crazy.
Yeah.
At some point, I've seen that. Now, one other one before I get to Auntie is Elliot, who's the gross one, obviously. of the bikes. Yeah. The illustration has him. He's got snot basically all over his fingers and hanging out of his nose and stuff like that. We got to have one of those. I mean, especially if it's aimed at anywhere near children, that's you got to have one of those kind of characters.
Got to have the comic relief character. I think in the second issue we just flat out say he's an imbecile. He's just the dumb one. It's a funny. That character is actually really sweet, just because how innocent he is. And that's just another fun one, another fun character to draw, because you just draw him with a blank stare and his giant tongue just hanging out. And in that image you mentioned, it's just he's pulling snot out of his nose and. Like that's okay. That's okay to do in public.
Yeah, well, if you're a rabbit, yeah,
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
See, rabbits get the whole thing of being a rabbit is different than being a human. You get to do these kinds of crazy things, which is kind of fun. Now, of course, the last one on the page, I always love the fact that in the very bottom, who's the character on there? But Auntie Agatha.
Yeah.
And she's on the bottom of there. So what's funny to me about her is I keep trying to remember the name of the scientist that passed recently who used to use a computer to make sounds that he wanted to speak.
Oh, Stephen Hawking.
So. Yes. She's the Stephen Hawking of the group in that sense that she says things through the computer. She doesn't speak really. She just sits there and makes the stuff happen on the computer, and it doesn't always make sense.
Yeah. I think if we get a chance to explore more of this, I'd love to get a chance to do some backstory on Agatha, because at least in the first three issues, it's implied that there's a history with Jay Jackson, Jackson, and her, as far as trying to get this estate. And I think that's kind of great that, again, Keith just kind of by the first issue, you're kind of thrown into something, and there's obviously, it seems like there's a backstory to this. Like this world has been living, and we're just peeking into it now. And Agatha's been defiant since the beginning, and this is her home. This is her place, and for all these rabbits and for her niece. And it's probably the strongest character when she doesn't talk besides going through the computer.
Yeah, which is really funny.
But you don't get a chance to see her too often, at least in the first couple issues.
Yeah.
But I'd love to do some more backstory on her.
Yeah, she's fun.
Maybe when she was young. That would be really cool.
Yeah, of course, she's the one that owns the house, apparently, the whole bunch. And that's, of course, where all this stuff comes when somebody wants to come and take the house away from them. Talk a little bit about the two big, tall, bulky women. They say their names at one point, and I just don't have it in front of me. One's Naomi, I think, and I'm Naomi, and I'm Raquel.
When I first read that, I loved it. It's just the genius of Keith with that writing, with just having him speak almost like robots. It's just hilarious. I could never have thought of that. It was just so good. With these characters, it's a blank slate. They just kind of are the the muscle. We're not going to get much backstory on them besides that they are just these characters that are. It's actually almost like if we're going through the book at times as being new to this world through them, because it's the first time going onto the estate and then seeing Buster and seeing how unusual that situation is, and then asking like, "Oh, these rabbits live in the house with you?" It's great. I love that we get kind of a little bit go through them, but these are just like mean muscle, and they'll do anything for the boss.
And they're women, interestingly enough. The thing is that they're women. I expected those kinds of characters would be guys.
No, and that's what's cool. It's just like Keith is just like, hell, why does it gotta, I assume it would be a guy too, but he's just like, let's just, without even asking, he didn't even ask me. It's just like, we're just gonna make them make them women. Like, yeah, why not, man? They could be badass women, and and you know, being a muscle and you know, there's something really funny about the way that those two interact with each other, and they speak for each other. And at first, I thought they might be robots. I didn't know what direction this was going to go. What level of fantasy are we going with this book? Besides, you know, having a rabbit being able to talk to a human and they understand each other. But yeah, I love the dynamic of these two that it just seemed like they're in sync. You know,
Total. I mean, they. You know, you talk about being the muscle. They're not necessarily the brains. They are the they don't think that much. They have their certain things they say. What's really interesting is they're in the books for quite a long time. You know, they say certain things at certain times, and you know, I kind of think they're going to get mean at some point, but they don't really.
That's funny. Yeah. You kind of assume that, right? Like they're going to go. We're that's it. I've had enough of this, and then the sleeves go up and it's time to kind of take care of business, but no, you don't get that. And I think that'd be too, I think with Keith, that I think Keith is thinking that's too easy.
Yeah.
That's too easy to go down this road. I think Keith wants to tease it and not give you what you want, what the reader might want to get
it's really good.
Yeah. It's really cool because I read, a lot of Keith stuff, like even you know his current stuff, like the Scooby-Doo stuff, and it feels so different. I feel like this is his chance to kind of do a just you know relax and write something that is just so out of the norm because it is a really unusual book for as a comic. There's a lot of dialogue. It's just a lot of talking. A lot of really great dialogue, a lot of banter, and in it's kind of a weird comic.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Well, Keith never wanted to write standard stuff. He's just not going to do it.
And I love his trencher stuff. To me, back in the 90s, I wanted more trencher stuff. That to me it was just so weird. And his line art was weird. And I think I asked him one time if he used like how did he do those lines? And I remember he said he hated it. He used like these rapidograph pens, it was just so bizarre. So any of his creator-owned stuff just seems so off the wall.
Yeah, well, he did a graphic novel one time where he had like 16 panels on one page. I remember looking at it thinking, my gosh, did he have to draw all that? You know, good grief.
I tell you what, when we did the Halloween series, the I Love Halloween series for Tokyo Pop, there was stuff like that in the book, and I didn't have a lot of experience with comics, and he would have some pages where the panels would have like 10, 12 panels with a lot of dialogue and a lot of two characters talking to each other, and I was like, oh my god, this is how am I gonna keep the pacing interesting for the just visually when it's two characters just talking to each other back and forth for 12 panels. That's Keith likes to do that a lot. I think one of his favorites is to do a lot of beat jokes where you know it stays in frame and the camera stays in one position and you get a whole story on one page where the camera doesn't move. Those I love them, but they drive me crazy.
You don't want the same old stuff. So he just does wonderful stuff. Now, issue 4, which came out February 13th, I want to read the description to give people what's going on. Loomis the Mouse, who we talked about, devises the ultimate booby trap to get rid of his feline enemies. But Sawyer has other plans for Loomis' contraption, to spring this mouse trap on Naomi and Raquel. That's going to be something interesting. So they're still in the house. These guys, the two women, are still standing in the house. They've been there for ages.
Well, this is, I'm telling you, it's a weird book. It all really takes place in like 2 days, maybe three, and it's just weird. I like that in three issues, you know, these characters have maybe moved from the living room to the kitchen. That's about it. You know.
That's so unusual. I mean, normally you see comics.
Airports, no buildings, no skyscrapers. It's all in a living. It's all in a house.
Yeah. I'm always reminded when Grant Morrison did the Animal Man series, and he's Grant Morrison is talking to Animal Man at one point. They're going along talking, and he says, you know, the readers are going to start to get bored. I'm going to have somebody attack you now. And this character comes from off camera and attacks Animal Man while they're talking so that the readers won't get bored. And it's kind of that kind of story here.
That's great. Yeah. It's daring because, mm-hmm. Image is awesome. Like, mm-hmm. We get to do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. I think if this was maybe a different writer, mm-hmm. and if this was published at another place, we wouldn't have the luxury of having three issues where, you know, there's not action. There's a lot of great dialogue, a lot mm-hmm. of great character development, mm-hmm. but, you know, we're not getting a lot of, you know, there's no punches or chase scenes. It's just a lot of great character development and you know, Keith pulls it off with, mm-hmm. with these stories.
So much fun.
It's just, I'm just really proud to be able to work on that with him.
That's great. Now, of course, now there's six issues in this miniseries. Yeah. Do you guys have plans for it after that? Is that going to wrap up the story? How are you going to do that?
Yeah, we'd love to do more. I am hoping we get a chance to do a volume two where the story just continues. Mm-hmm. We originally wanted to do it in small bites. Mm-hmm. After the sixth issue, I'm starting another project. Mm. Right after that, where just something more. I never thought I would do superhero stuff. I love superhero books. I mm-hmm. grew up with it, but I actually never thought I would want to, you know, to do a superhero book. But I found a spin on it that it would be fun to do. So I'm going to jump onto another project and then jump back to volume two of Rabbits. And we have a lot of cool ideas in introducing, I think, my favorite character that we've worked on. And it's mentioned in the book once, mm-hmm. but his name is Stan, and the other Stan. And I can't wait to get a chance to draw that character because when Keith wrote that, it's just like Stan, and the other Stan. It's just one person, one rabbit. Mm-hmm. So when we get around to doing volume two, I think that'll be great. I think it's gonna be a fun character that takes center stage.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Now, I've got to ask you, of course, can you tell us which superhero you're working on, or is that something we're going to have to wait for an official announcement?
Oh, yeah, that's an official announcement.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Which leads to before we wrap up on the Agatha, it leads right into how do we follow you on social media? Are there other places we can keep up with what you're doing?
Right now, I'm just I have my website, which is waywardrabbits.com, and that's where I just post all of my updates, and I'm going to start posting some of the interior. I did a lot of like these fun blueprints, mock-ups of like sketches that we did over the last 4 years developing the series. Mm. So I'm going to start posting a lot more content on there, and I will start putting some fan art on there as well. Mm. So you can always find me there.
Okay. Now, and on March 13, according to the website, is issue 5 of 6. And I imagine somewhere around the middle of the month is when number 6 of 6 will come out in April. I got to read it because it makes me – it's just a great thing that's going on. It says, Sawyer tries his best to rally all the rabbits on the Agatha estate in preparation for another attack by J. Yes. Jackson. I like that, J. Jackson, yeah. Jackson. That's funny.
Yes, J. Jackson.
He's finding out – go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, yes, that is we're gonna get a Braveheart moment in that issue, which is it's Keith's it's great. It's I actually never reading the script for that. I never felt you can feel like a sadness, like it tugs on you when some of the Keith's speech. Mm-hmm. Sawyer's speech to rally the troops, mm-hmm. and it's freaking great. Mm-hmm.
Well, looking forward to that. Is this considered all ages? I'm just kind of curious about it because, you know, you've got a young teen girl as the lead, and then you've got these rabbits who are really kind of resembling a lot of adults in some ways. Is this all ages?
No, I was torn about this. Talking with Image, I decided to do it as a teen book,
okay.
Just because of that. I didn't want to mislead anybody by, mm-hmm. you know, because the imagery is all, you know, it's super cartoony imagery. It's, mm-hmm. you know, bright and colorful, and I didn't want to mislead anybody with, because, you know, the content is a little crazy, you know, mm-hmm. and there's subject matter that, you know, in Keith's writing, he's daring, mm-hmm. and he likes to push the boundaries. So mm-hmm. I wanted to err on the safe side and have it a teen label mm-hmm. on it. So as far as all age, I wouldn't recommend that.
Okay.
Even though there's nothing, I think it's more in the tone and mm-hmm. some of the dialogue.
So what would you say would be the youngest that could read this?
Oh,
I'm sure you don't want young children reading it, I imagine.
I
10, 12,
13, okay. I guess
that would be good. Yeah, that would be a good thing for that. So that it's nice to know, because honestly, sometimes you get parents come in with a kid and they come, "What book can my child read?" You know.
Yeah, right. That's got to be tough, huh?
So I actually work. I help a person who does a rabbit book. It's called Stabbity Bunny. And it's a kind of a horror/mystery type book. And yeah. We've often had parents come up and say, we're at conventions and stuff, what's the age group to read this? You know, because they want to know. You know, so, sorry?
Oh, Sam, I bet you that happens a lot, actually.
Yeah, it's quite a, you know, because parents, they're trying to do right by their kids and trying to do stuff like that. So this is why it's important to me. I'd like to know.
Yeah, I understand completely, especially looking at the thing about the covers. I wanted to do weird kind of abstract covers. Mm-hmm. So first issue, you know, I can, you know, you have all these, you know, these characters and they're floating and I can see because there's no label on the front as far as you know, age right. group, but I think it's only on the back. Mm-hmm. But I can see, you know, you're looking at anybody looking at the cover and thinking, oh, well, you know, this is a Minions or this yeah. is a, you know, a kid's book. Yeah. And then, you know, you start flipping through it and you know, it might parent might be a little upset by the, you know, maybe some of the material for, you know, like a 9-year-old or something.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? It's you're appealing to a group I don't think there are many comics specifically for. I don't think teens get many comics. I mean, they kind of figure teens or adults is kind of, so superheroes they kind of figure are teen books.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily good for teens, you know, and that's why I'm glad that you guys are doing a book that reaches out to that audience that maybe would like to have something kind of fun and interesting to read.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope it reaches the people that I don't know, they would want something a little different. Just because, yeah, it's a, you know, it's not a superhero book. It's not a, you know, it's not a crime book. It's just it's a weird little series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you like something different. I mean, I like something different.
Absolutely, I love different. I love weird stuff. I love dialogue. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when there's like this nice rapport going back and forth mm-hmm. with some of these characters, Keith is just, he's sharp. Mm-hmm. He's sharp.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anybody wants to know or get an idea what the book is like, if you go to waywardrabbits.com, you go to preview the book, chapters 1, 2, and 3 have previews in there, which you can look at. So that's always a good thing to do. I like to give people a chance to check things over. So.
Yeah, thank you. And I will be putting a preview for 4 in the following week. And I think there's a lot of stuff on there that people can just kind of browse through and get a taste of it and see if they.
I got to point out the wonderful about the creators type page. You've turned both the two of you into rabbits, and you're sitting in chairs. You've got this scowl on your face with
the pompous artsy look. Yeah. It was weird. I was torn about what to do, and I communicate a lot with Keith's daughter, Keith is a very interesting man. I could have an hour long conversation with him on the phone, and then I might not hear from him for months. Mm-hmm. So I sent him the little illustration and to see what he thought of it. Not a peep. Didn't hear anything. I've known him for a really long time now, so I know not to take that personal. It's just Keith. I'll hear from his daughter, and she's like, "Oh, he loved it I'm like, "Okay, cool. I'm glad he communicated that to you." So I love that the image of this seasoned looking rabbit with hunched over some ridiculous typewriter.
Yeah,
it's fun. That was fun to do.
I love that you guys' eyes are sort of looking towards each other.
Yeah,
you're not looking at what you're doing. You're looking towards each other. I thought that was kind of
That's fun. I liked it a lot.
It's kind of fun. So this is a fun project. It's really good, and it's something that I think that scratches an itch that we just haven't had scratched in a long time, and that's teen books that are really good for teens and interesting, and will kind of entertain them and be something a little different. So again, it's, let me get the title exactly right, Auntie Agatha's Home for Wayward Rabbits.
And
it's great fun. Not Auntie, Auntie. We gotta make sure we get that straight in there. So that's good.
Tomato stuffed.
That's right. We gotta have that. So it's good stuff. Great fun. I hope that we get volume 2 before too long. I hope your superhero thing comes out so we can find out what's going on, because I'd love to see what it is. It must be fun, because that is a change from this to go to superhero.
We've been at this for 4 years. It was a lot of back and forth, a lot of number of personal things that got in the way, and it's been a really long road to get this book out. And I think I finished the first four issues maybe 3 years ago.
Oh wow!
It's been sitting for some time. It's a long The whole story is just in the making of the book itself. But so after wrapping it up, it's just nice to take a change and do something completely the other direction. So
that must be fun, because as an artist, you get sort of typecast after a while. You draw rabbit books.
Yes.
That kind of stuff, because you do it well and people like that. Say, "Oh, we've got a rabbit book you could draw." And, after a while, you don't want to draw rabbits necessarily. You want to draw superheroes, because that's different.
When Keith and I worked on the I Love Halloween series in 2000, I think it wrapped up in 2007. Mm-hmm. It was when Tokyopop had their that program. I think it was called the OEL program. It was all of the original content they were creating. And they labeled it, they just slapped the name manga on it. But it was all, Western creators, putting books out through Tokyopop. Mm-hmm. And I did that, that series, and it was all, super, super cartoony. It was all black and white, and you get labeled a certain thing. And everything after that book, I got, I was offered a bunch of all kinds of stuff that was in that super cartoony style, and didn't want to do that. I just wanted to do something completely different. So when I'll fast forward to now, it'd be great. I mean, what it'd be nice to hear other people's ideas for projects, but I don't necessarily want to jump to another rabbit book.
Well, you know what? You got your chance, and of course, the great thing was that you kind of inspired it. This is like full circle. Keith saw your drawing, and that inspired him to come up with the whole story, and then comes back to you to draw it. It's one of those great things, a truly collaborative comic. I think that's a great thing about it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Really great. Well, much success with it. I hope it's doing really, really well, and I hope we get to see more of Auntie Agatha's book. And more of Auntie Agatha too. I'd like to see.
I think we'll get maybe there'll be a in the second volume there'll be a get some a prequel. We get some maybe flashback scenes of a young Agatha, and we'll lead up to her in the situation she's in now.
Mm-hmm. It'll be fun. So you've got great characters, and I want to know more about them. So I think that's a great sign of a good comic when you sit there and go, how did this happen? What are they doing? And that's the way this book is. It really does grab you. I mean, even the two, Naomi and Raquel, I want to know more about them because they're just the craziest thing. I just, you know, I like to call them the women in black because they're wearing sort of a dark suit and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're definitely intimidating figures.
So it's kind of funny. So anyway, it's a great book. It's lots of fun. If you want something that is going to give you some variety in your reading, and of course the art is great, the Keith's writing is fabulous as always, and your art is great as always, so be sure to pick that up. If you haven't seen it yet, ask your store if they have back issues in there, and if you have to, hang on and when the trade comes out. They're going to do trade right after 6.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we'll do that. So we got to make sure that they do that because catch up people on those good things. You know, this would make, I say this often in this podcast, this would make a great cartoon. You know, this could be on Netflix in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could be something. I think there's a lot of room to play with this world, even outside of our main storyline. Yeah. I think there's a lot to play with there. Yeah.
Hopefully Netflix is listening because we've got a good suggestion for you. So, Benjamin, great talking with you. And, man, I wish you much success. I'm going to be looking for that superhero book and then coming around to Volume 2 after we wrap up this first storyline. So great stuff.
Great, thank you, and thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.